Good morning, and welcome to the final episode of Global Lithium Q&A for 2019. It has been a very difficult year in the lithium world, as I think everybody who takes the time to listen to this is well aware. Just a couple of months ago, I was relatively confident that we were probably, if not at the bottom, very, very close. With some of the discussions I've had over the past few weeks in various parts of the world, I now believe that the bottom isn't here yet. I still think we're close time-wise, but I think for a number of different reasons that I'll get into a little bit later, there is going to be another step down in price, and we'll see that in both 2020 spot and 2020 contracts. I still believe the long-term new normal for battery quality lithium carbonate is in the 12 plus range based on the cost curve and based on a hockey stick in demand that we have not seen yet. But you know, if I had a real mea culpa on some of the things I've said this year, it was I didn't see the bottom being as low as it is, and you know, I've already talked about that. I have not capitulated. You know, I certainly don't believe Morgan Stanley's right. I still believe that their philosophy is a bit of the stop clocks right twice a day, but I do think that. For the short term, it appears that they made the right call. Where I think they're wrong is that I believe that by 2021, you're going to have a fairly significant turnaround in price, and that you know the $12,000 to $14,000 new normal price range is going to be validated, even if it took us, you know, longer to get back up to that level from the lows than I thought. So anyway, this again is the last episode of the year. I've got a number of questions that I'm going to get into. So grab your beverage of choice and spend 20 minutes with me talking about the lithium business. So the first item I'd like to talk about is a recent, and recent being, I think, last week, Goldman Sachs put out a short report on some discussions they had had with Ganfeng's management. And Ganfeng was in the United States, and Goldman spent some time with them. And so I'm just going to quote a summary from that report and then talk about it in a little more depth. So this is Goldman speaking. Following the roadshow, we reiterate our belief that the lithium market is approaching a bottom. Considering that prices imply very little or possibly even a negative return for non-integrated Chinese converters, we see further limited downside to spot pricing. Should demand outpace expectations following several months of weak EV sales trends, or should we see additional major supply curtailments, we could envision an environment where lithium prices begin to reverse positively. As we approach a bottom, we urge investors to dust off their lithium books and recommend ALB and LTHM as buy-rated names to own in a bottom price environment. And again, those are Goldman Sachs words, not mine. I certainly do not want to be accused of recommending stocks directly. And so to put it into context, that is just to set the stage kind of for what Goldman was saying about the market. They go into depth on several different things. And ironically, they make this positive call even with what I would view as very flawed cost curves. They, in my mind, on both when they do carbonate and hydroxide, they have the low cost producers much lower than they the reality of the costs are. So if Goldman is a little bit off on the cost curve on the low end and is still making a call that we're probably at the bottom, that should give investors some hope. But again, I want to be clear that I think there's kind of one more tick down in price that's happening right now. And I think it's a couple of things. One is that between now and Chinese New Year, I think there are a few of the Chinese converters, non-integrated Chinese converters, that are having real trouble with their banking relationships, given the current financial and banking situation in China. And in some cases, simply to raise cash in the next few weeks towards the end of the year and probably for a while after, before Chinese New Year, they are selling product below their cash cost just to raise cash. And, that's not a sustainable situation, obviously, but it does have an impact on the psychology and the market. I would also say that, we've seen SQM sell large volumes into China. And, I think in many cases, it's low quality product they're just getting rid of. But I've also been made aware that some of it isn't low quality product and some of it's actually suitable for battery use. And these prices are significantly below the price they're selling to similarly situated customers in Korea and Japan. So, SQM has stated that they want to increase their share. And Mr. Ramos, you probably don't listen, but if you are listening, SQM's share gain isn't going to happen. The market's growing faster than your capacity adds. So in that scenario, you can gain volume, you can gain low price volume, but you're not going to gain share. And so having restoration of your old share situation as a goal is fatuous. So my advice to you is to kind of take a step back and revisit some of your recent behaviors and maybe change your evil ways. So that's kind of the first thing I wanted to discuss. And it's not, and again, everybody knows I'm a big fan of Gangfen. So these aren't just my words. I'm bringing you Goldman Sachs, who obviously is a blue chip company, making statements about the industry and about what they see. And if you haven't been able to get your hands on a copy of their recent write-up, if you have the ability to do that. And don't write me. I don't want to get 10, dozens of emails from people saying, please send me the Goldman report. But I think the more creative of you that write to me probably have other sources to get that information. This is kind of point one is I'm drawing attention to the fact that I think there's one more step down in price. We're seeing prices and Orocobre validated this on the low end, on the non-battery quality front, where I think they talked about prices between $5,000 and $6,000 in kind of their last quarterly discussion. And we've seen SQM sell in the fives, and then some of the material they moved to China is at a higher price than that, but it's still more in the $7,000 range. So you've got all these factors, and people will write to me again. I had somebody comment on my Twitter account, and that person's now blocked, about me being now the negative guy and Morgan Stanley being the positive entity. And I don't think that's true. I'm still bullish long-term on lithium. I'm just saying 2020, I believe, is going to be a very tough year, and that what happens in a tough year is simply that it continues to represent a good time to acquire long-term quality assets. And so in 2020, I'm going to be a buyer of lithium stocks because the time to buy isn't when things are great. The time to buy, as Baron Rothschild said, is when there's blood in the streets. So I'm not going to sit here with a laundry list of recommended stocks. You already heard what Goldman thinks. But anybody who listens to me on a regular basis knows my favorites, and I will continue to acquire shares in those companies. I have a number of topics that I'm just going to talk about in kind of a stream of consciousness way, rather than just deal with listener questions, because I think I incorporate a lot of the questions into my comments here. And I think the first point would be is everybody seems very depressed about 2019, but how much did demand really grow even in the environment where, you know, China was a disappointment EV demand wise? And I believe the consensus is, I put the number at about 40,000 tons. I have talked to lithium producers with higher numbers who think it maybe was 45. I've talked to another person I respect that follows the industry very closely. He thinks the number's probably 35. So let's just frame it at between 35 and 45,000 tons of growth. Now, this is on top of a market that was about 270,000 tons in 2018. So any way you cut it, that's still pretty significant growth. And arguably, before EV demand really ticks up or hits that hockey stick that I keep talking about. And, you know, again, the hockey stick may be 2 years away, but this market, as pessimistic as people are, is still growing pretty fast. You know, I'm not going to get into the whole oversupply narrative because I think that's going to sort itself out in 2020. And I've said it many times and we'll just reiterate it here again, is that an oversupply of spodumene concentrate has, you know, obviously had a dampening effect on price and has brought down the cost curve because people can now acquire raw material for much less per ton than they could previously. I think MinRes just put out an announcement that the Mount Marion price for Ganfeng's in the coming quarters around 520. And we all know that price was much, much higher not that long ago. And, you know, in the case of Ganfeng really, because of their ownership and assets, is vertically integrated. In from my perspective anyway, I know some people think if you don't own 100% of the mine, that's not vertical integration. I do view it differently. But the incremental producers, converters in China are also going to benefit to some extent from the lower pricing. The only issue is a lot of people are sitting on large inventories of spodumene that were purchased at much higher costs. So that situation all has to get worked out. And most of the independent converters right now don't have cash to buy additional quantities. So, you know, this is a short-term situation that's going to get worked out. In staying with China for a minute, honestly, you know, people, I think, overly obsess about the subsidies. I think China's going to use policy to keep this EV growth happening. And, you know, obviously they, with the change in the subsidies, it did slow it. I basically, the last numbers I looked at stated that the gigawatt hours for auto could be actually down in 2019 over 2018. But this is a thing that China knows how to deal with. They tinker with policy, and when something doesn't work, they fix it. And it may not be a subsidy as we've seen in the past, but I kind of frame it more broadly as policy towards EVs. And I believe that ultimately the market in China is going to turn around, but I'm not really focusing on that in 2020. I'm really kind of taking a much closer look at Europe. And there's a core group of people that follow me on social media from Europe that have always kind of criticized me for ignoring Europe. But I assure those good people, and Bernard, shout out to you. I'm not going to ignore Europe in 2020. I think that you're going to see EV sales tick up there. And there's going to be a build out of that, of the related industry to EVs in Europe over the next several years. As I've said many times, cathode is still going to be an Asia business for a while. And so the actual impact of Europe is going to be indirect in that the demand for EVs in Europe is going to enhance demand for lithium in Asia, because that's where the cathode is going to continue to be made for a while. But ultimately, that will change in time too. But I know Europeans are, there's new policies that have recently been put in place to try to encourage investment across the supply chain. And I'm not a big fan of government intervention, but in the case of the EU, they may be able to make that work. I think initially it won't really help some of the lithium projects there, but ultimately, who knows? There are people that comment on the industry that live in Europe that are probably better placed than I am to talk about that in detail. I think we're also going to have to keep looking at Argentina with the government change. I remain very confident that Cauchari will start up successfully in 2021. We also have to see what happens with Orocobre. They've had, as I understand it, more personnel churn in Jujuy, which is never good for an operation that's already got some issues. And then we'll have to see what happens with Livent's expansion. I'm hoping that goes well. It's my alma mater under the name FMC Lithium, not Livent. But, you know, they have a great 20-year track record of producing in Argentina. And, I mean, the problem that they've had now is that the big four competitors have expanded and expanded, and Livent's kind of just rested on their laurels, and now is at a position where they need to get this next 20,000 tons online to remain viable and credible, because now the people that are buying large scale amounts of lithium hydroxide, which Livent focuses on, really don't want to hear that they can't deliver these huge volumes that people are talking about coming in the future. We'll continue to follow the drama in and out of the Atacama. I mean, it's broader. It's a kind of a countrywide drama now. And as I've said many times, I don't believe the Atacama is going to be able to do the kind of huge volumes that people thought it could do 2 years ago. But SQM will continue to grow their volume, if not their share. And I think, you know, Albemarle will continue to limp along trying to grow their volumes a bit. But again, at the end of the day, the export statistics tell the tale, and we'll continue to follow that and keep you informed. As far as Australia goes, let's see. I believe there'll be another shutdown of a asset in WA, a care and maintenance situation, I think is going to happen in before Q2 of next year. And, so I think that will help the crisis of oversupply of spodumene, because honestly, it prices in the $500 range. The new operations need to be running at high volumes to get their cost to a level where they can actually make money in a $500 spodumene concentrate world. And, I think, obviously Talison's going to run as long as Greenbushes has has lithium in the ground. Mount Marion will continue to run. I believe Pilbara is, you know, kind of the new guy survivor. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Mount Catlin's already announced it's going to scale back a little bit. Whether they, you know, maintain that or not, we'll see. But I think the world, at this time next year, the world of spodumene and WA has kind of gotten to a level that, it, you know, makes sense. And then as the market grows and the hockey stick comes, as I've said many times, I think every operation that's been built, you know, people will come off care and maintenance, and, you know, all that capacity is going to be needed. What Albemarle and MinRes do with their project, you know, time will tell. I think the other big story in Australia next year is going to be what happens at Kwinana with TNT's hydroxide plant. I think it's going to be a long slog, but obviously they've kind of bet the farm on coming into the hydroxide world as a big player with that operation. And I think they're going to have to see it through. And I think ultimately they will see it through, but I think it's going to take a while. So those are kind of my stream of consciousness thoughts on the market. Another point I just will throw out to those of you who may not know. I mean, Albemarle's personnel situation is, it just to me is unbelievable. I don't know how many guys have left or been fired in the past year, but recently Albemarle let go their chief commercial officer. And, you know, this is just another, this is another sign of issues when, you know, there are times when you have to cut back on staff, no doubt about it, but Albemarle's just kind of been a revolving door. Honestly, I believe they still have way too many people, but when you are having key guys leave, it's not a good thing. So, you know, we'll see how things go next year with Albemarle. I think they've got major challenges. I think they've made some strategic blunders, but they still have two of the best assets in the world in the Atacama and Greenbushes. So if they write the management ship, you know, they're going to do well. And that's my final point I would leave you with is, even if 2020 is a tough year, I believe the big four lithium players are well positioned to prosper long term. Tianqi's got to clean up their debt, and they, you know, obviously they're in the midst of a capital raise that was announced last week, and you know the acquisition of the SQM shares was really a blunder. But hey, everybody makes mistakes. And this is an industry that is, you know, trying to grow up, and they probably just need to mature a little faster than what we've seen in the last couple of years. But no matter what my Twitter account says, I remain a long-term lithium bull. And I think anybody who listens to this is probably of the same ilk. So with that, I will say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. There are three excellent Global Lithium podcasts that have been released this month, end of last month and this month. The Geek Squad. The Geek Squad's already in the top 10 all time. And that was Dr. Yuan Gao, Dan Blondell, Rene LeBlanc, Tom Benson. I think I got them all. And then we had Boys in the Hood, the Benchmark guys. That's done very well from a download standpoint. And then we followed it up and put another Benchmark guy up. Vivas Kumar is on the last episode, and I can't tell you when there'll be another episode of the Global Lithium podcast. we don't really have any specific plans for the next episode. So I will keep cranking the Global Lithium Q&A out once the new year dawns. But with that, I'm going to say, Fiona's not happy with the FedEx delivery, and I'm going to close this out. good day.
This has been another episode of Global Lithium Q&A. For more on the lithium industry, you can follow me on Twitter at Global Lithium, on LinkedIn, where I've published more than 100 articles on the lithium space, or at www.lithiumpodcast.com for the Global Lithium Podcast, which I co-host with Emily Hirsch. And it's also available on most major podcast outlets. Once again, thanks for listening.